Show with Greg Berg is next.
Mr. Patterson had to postpone our interview. I hope that I'll be able to speak with him in the near future. But in place of the scheduled interview is a treat from the Morning Show archives, an interview I was truly privileged to record back in 2016 with former Major League Baseball player Ransom Jackson. He penned with Galen Watts a memorable, entertaining memoir called Handsome Ransom Jackson, Accidental Big Leaguer, in which he tells story after story about some against.
All these stories, and my book is just stories. Nobody gets shot, nobody gets killed. It's just stories about the things that have happened to me over the years, both in college and growing up during the Depression, which most folks nowadays have never heard of the Depression. And then what I did in the big leagues and things that happened afterwards. And I speeches to say, you know, you ought to put all that down on paper because all these guys you're talking about, most of them are not here, and you know, there's no way to verify that they're not here. You need to put Greg Grant, and I thought they deserved all these stories. They'd heard most of them, but I thought they deserved them on paper. So I sat down and got legal pads and start writing, and filled up four legal pads, which is something like 300 yellow pages. And my wife typed them up, and we looked at each other and said, well, what do you do now? And so a friend who had just written a baseball book about Steve Belko in Pacific Coast in California, and I happened to have played with Steve Belko, so it kind of fit. And I got a hold of Galen, and we talked, and he came down to Athens. He was in North Georgia, and he turned out to be the best I've ever seen as far as an author. He looks up everything. He'd take a paragraph of mine, turn it into four paragraphs. Just a beautiful fit. And here we are today. He sent it to his publisher, and his publisher took a week and a half to decide to go ahead and publish it, which I understand is kind of unusual.
Right, in this day and age. I want you to tell our listeners about a phrase that starts with the word bingo and ends with the word or the name Bilko.
Now, Galen White threw that one out.
Right.
Yeah, he's very artistic. But, of course, I played with Ernie Banks. He was my shortstop when I was third base. And then the second baseman was Baker. And then there used to be a famous threesome for the Cubs. What was it? Tinker, to Evers, to Chance. And so Galen played around with it and came up with that phrase. So that's all his.
Right. Bingo to Bargo to Bilko. Yeah. And in a sense, he was mentioning that is in terms of Ransom Jackson, Accidental Big Leaguer. Well, let's start at the beginning where you grew up in the beautiful state of Arkansas.
Little Rock, Arkansas. Grew up during the Depression, and all we had was if three guys showed up, you'd make up a game of four, and if 20 guys showed up, you get up a game of 20, and you just play and play until people decide they had to go home, and you just made up these games in your side yard and over at the school, and because we did not have any organized thing, you didn't have Little League back then, you just had to make do.
Hmm. So, and some of those games you were making up were, in a sense, baseball.
It was just games are made up.
Right. And what a great creative venture for that and a way to stay fit.
Yeah, we had one game and played in the guy's backyard. We had a fence in it. Backyard was fenced in, wooden fence, and you had a broomstick.
Were golf and track, were you any good?
Well, first track meet I trained for the 220 the whole month. And then the first track meet, the coach says, you run the 440. And I said, what? I never ran a 440. And so I ran 220 yards as fast as I could, and I was in first place. And the last 220, I was in last place because I could not last that long. So I wasn't much of a track man. Golf, I started at 12.
Ever playing organized baseball or organized football, for that matter, until you get to college. First of all, explain the circumstances under which you went to college.
Well, of course, I graduated in 43 from high school and immediately went to the University of Arkansas because that's what most guys did. And 6 months later, I was getting close to my 18th birthday in the Air Corps in Corpus Christi. And he didn't fly, but he was in charge of the cadets at one of the smaller fields. And he told me, he said, "Son, you don't want to be a pilot." He said, "I'm down here, and we have two or three crashes a day because we've got so many guys. What you want to do is go into the Navy officer's training program and be a cadet in the V-12 program." I said, "Dad, I don't even know what that is." He said, "That's what you need to do." I said, "Okay." So he swore me in. And I got a letter from the Navy, said, "We're going to send you to Texas Christian University," which I'd never heard of, in Fort Worth. And that's what they did. And I went there as a seaman and making $50 a month. And they had all these courses you had to take, 20 hours a course. I said, "I've dabbled in it, kicking and passing and playing around." He said, "Well, I'll make you a lineman." I was 6'1" and 160 pounds.
So not exactly a natural line.
No, no. And so I went over there, and I start first day, and, you know, start running into each other. And this guy was knocking me down, and I walked over to Coach Meyer at the end of the first day. I said, "Coach, I'm a backfield man. I saw those guys, backfield guys, passing around." So he said, "Okay." So the season started, and we had had quite a few Navy guys on the team, but we didn't have many guys at all. And as it played, and we won the conference, and we got beat by Oklahoma A&M, who had three All-Americans on it. We had Doodley Squat. We didn't have anything. University of Texas, a Navy school down there, and to finish up, my midshipman school. And the coach down there was a guy named Dana X. Bible, who was also in the Hall of Fame. And he called me and he said, "Jackson, I saw you play at TCU. I want you to come out at the university." I said, "Coach, you know, I've got all this studying to do." And he said, "I sure would like it. We got a new quarterback coming in by the name of Bobby Lane. And we'd like for you to play." So I did.
I think you say in the book, you shouldn't say no to somebody whose last name...
Baseball, of course, I went out there and I led the league in hitting at TCU, and I led it 2 years at Texas. And I got to play football with Bobby Lane and baseball with Bobby Lane. And he was a pretty good pitcher. His record for 2 years down there was 28. And the following Friday, before the next game, the president comes out on the steps of the administration.
This is probably as good a time as any to mention what is one of the predominant themes of your life, and certainly of this memoir, Ransom Jackson, Accidental Big Leaguer, and that is the fact that much of your success in your mind is due to the fact that you were in the right place at the right time. I mean, you were really, really fortunate, and I suppose in one way, it's really important that and good for you that you showed up at college at this point in time when the number of guys going out for sports was quite depleted. So you had coaches looking for players. And in a more normal season, maybe you never would have gotten that invitation to come out for football or baseball.
That's very true. Just everything happened. And of course, I didn't plan anything. You know, a lot of kids nowadays, they plan, "I want to play football here, I want to do this, I want to play baseball, I want to do that." But I did not plan any one thing in my life. I just was rocking along like a dumb teenager, and things were just going along. I'd play baseball, football, and then whatever. And then a guy offered me a contract to play professional baseball, and I could not name you one Major League Baseball player if my life depended on it. So since I led the league 3 straight years, he was the first and only scout that I'd ever met. He came up to me and said, "Do you want to play pro baseball?" And I said, "You know, I ain't got nothing else to do. I'm graduating. I got to do something. So I'll I'll listen. What do you want? He said, come up to Chicago and try out, and we'll see what we can do. And so I did with my dad, and I hit a couple of balls in the stands and fielded some balls. They called me in there. And the general manager said, well, we like what we see. What we're going to do, we're going to offer you a contract to play baseball with the Cubs, and a major league contract. And that means that there's 40 guys in a major league contract, and you get to go to spring training and everything with the big boys. And here's what we're going to offer you money-wise. We're going to give you a two-year contract. Think of that, 2 years, and we're going to pay you $6,000 a year. And I said, whoopee, I turned a flip because I didn't have anything else to do with my life. So that's what we're talking about accidentally. You know, these things just came out and dropped in my lap, so I decided I'd go ahead and do it. And so I went with them in 48 and just kept on playing and quit in 59 and got to meet all these fabulous people who played against all these fabulous baseball players. And I have so many stories in the book that it's just Pee Wee Reese and my roommate Don Drysdale and all these people that I know and play with and things that have happened. And I wanted to put them in a book so they'd be preserved for posterity. 25 years later, the phone rang. It was my son in Columbus, Georgia. He said, Dad, you know you were on Good Morning America. I said, no, I didn't. He said, well, they had a question. Then I researched in one night in Brooklyn playing against Philadelphia. The score was 5-2, and Pee Wee Reese got up, walked, and then Snyder hit a home run, which made it 5-4. Then I was batting cleanup, and I hit a home run, made it 5-5, and Gil Hodges hit a home run, and the game was over. That's three straight home runs in the bottom of the ninth. Well, we researched that for years and found out that that's never been done except that time. So he kept throwing these things around, and it was just all accidental. I didn't know these things were happening.
We're speaking with Ransom Jackson, and his new played both with and against some of the greatest legends of the game. And his wonderful book is filled to the brim with...
Springfield, Massachusetts, I got to meet a mafia don... And he became a good friend of mine, and we did a few things together. So he's in the book. And most people don't run around with mafia dogs.
I have had the pleasure of doing a couple of morning show interviews about minor league baseball. And I know today, at least, life in the minor leagues can be, in a sense, kind of desperate because you have these young athletes who are just desperate to climb from the minor leagues to the major leagues, and so much is riding on their success and failure, and so it's packed with pressure, and of course it's a precious few ball players manage to ascend to the big leagues, and more end up crashing and burning or just fighting and or was it just sort of fun? I mean,
fun. Just, you know, another thing to do. I was making enough money to get through the year, and it was just fun. And as far as saying I'm going to do this for another 10 years, it never entered my mind. I was just waiting for the next year's contract to go to spring training and start the fun all over again. There's a big difference between 6,500 kids coming out of college.
I think this is such a great line. Baseball is a game where you can quickly go from the outhouse to the penthouse and back. So, in other words, when someone is playing the game of baseball, particularly at that level, your fortunes can rise and fall, sometimes in really bewildering fashion. Baseball was one of steady success, nothing terribly spectacular, but you just sort of managed to get the job done. How would you sort of characterize your strengths and weaknesses as a ball player as you first reached the major leagues?
Well, I was batting cleanup for the Dodgers and turned the knob off on a porcelain shower porcelain knob, and it broke off in my hand. And it ripped my thumb up all the way down to the bone. And so I was out, and Jackie Robinson comes back in and plays well. So I don't know how I would have done there. You know, you hurt your knee. Somebody falls on your knee. And another year, you get a spider bite, infects your hand where you can't play. So, I mean, I guess those are part of the game that you just have to accept. But I hit three straight years. I hit 19, 20, 21 home runs, and if you make a couple of All-Star games, you're not doing too bad. But you know, I'm sure I could have done better. But my ambitions and aspirations, maybe I didn't work as hard because, again, it came so easy to me.
Hmm. One of the ahead of us who might not have welcomed their presence, we get the sense from reading your book that those kind of attitudes were really very alien to you, even though you had grown up in a place like Arkansas. Can you just say a word about what your own attitudes were about race at this point in time?
Well, of course, all that Arkansas stuff came after I left. I was never into that growing up. You know, back then, during the Depression, a person was a person was a person. You know, everybody was trying to get by. And then in college, in all my years in college, and I spent a lot of years in college, I never played with, I guess, one game we played against until Ernie Banks came in 53 or whatever, 54. So I was used to just people being people. And when I played against them, or then the one I ever met was just another guy. So I can very safely say that I didn't go through life with any kind of prejudice at all in sports. It was just if a player can help you, if he was polka dot, that was fine.
What are your most powerful recollections of the great Ernie Banks?
Well, of course, when Ernie first came up, we played side by side for a few years. And when he first came up and we started playing together after a few games, what I would do, I played third and Ernie played shortstop, and we were side by side. What I would do, I'd just move over closer to the third base line, and I turned to Ernie and said, take everything you can get. His wrists were just, they almost popped when he swung. That he was going to be a good one, and it turned out he did. And up before, and said, "I want to see you and talk to you beforehand." We talked for about an hour on the phone, and we did. We talked, and I'm sorry I didn't. He would have done it, but as nice a guy as you'll ever find, and we got along great.
Hmm. You also say that Ernie Banks displayed the patience of Job with the Chicago Cubs because he didn't play on a winning Cubs team until 1963. That was 10 years after he first joined the Cubs. I bet as you see the Chicago Cubs doing so spectacularly well this year, and of course we don't want to jinx it by saying how well they might ultimately finish this year, but I suppose you wish that Ernie Banks was still around to be enjoying their tremendous success in person.
Oh, I do, because being Mr. Cub, he would have been. We just lucked into it, so to speak. Not luck, we won a lot of games, but you had to wait till the last day to get in. I hope the Cubs, in the last month, get 10 games ahead or something, so they can coast in. But I'm really pulling for them.
Hmm. Since we've been talking about Ernie Banks, let's leave
around all the time to be sure he didn't steal third. So, I mean, he was in the game all the time. So playing with him, I mean, I was glad to see all the things going on. And I watched him do all these things firsthand. Well, it was firsthand watching behind my back, but to sit there and watch him perform with the Dodgers when He was performing
Nation, at a point when Jackie Robinson was in physical decline, and in a sense, it appeared that you were brought in to potentially replace him. So the relationship between the two of you, understandably, was probably a little bit awkward. Tell us about that relationship, especially right off the bat.
You know, and some days when I was playing, he would play second base. So he wasn't on the bench the whole time when I was playing. But we would talk about different players, where to play when they were up at the plate, what where we would play in the field. And we got along fine. We had no problems whatsoever. He knew what was going on. I knew what was going on. The manager, the day before the first game of the season, the manager, Walter Austin, told me that he decided to go with Jackie. We'd played. I understand. He deserves it. And then Jackie played for a month or so, didn't do too well. So I came in and batted clean up for the Brooklyn Dodgers, which was the greatest thrill of my life.
We're speaking with Handsome Ransom Jackson, and we're talking about his wonderful memoir called Handsome Ransom Jackson, Accidental Big Leaguer. Ransom Jackson played Major League Baseball for the 12 years of pro baseball. You never met an agent.
That's true.
So, in other words, you went through your entire baseball career without an agent. Was that uncommon at the time, or was it fairly commonplace for a Major League ball player to take care of all those such matters without the assistance of an agent?
There were agents around, and I think most of them were with Ted Williams and Mickey Mantle. It was $100 extra in all those years. So, you know, nowadays they get many millions for signing. I just didn't get any, but I didn't know the difference. So I took what I got.
One of the things that you make repeated mention of is the fact that when we look back at the decade of the 1950s, and we think about some of those extraordinarily beautiful ballparks in which the game was played, only two ballparks remain from the 1950s, Chicago's Wrigley Field.
Putting that the higher.
Back in your day, there were often games in which the empty seats would outnumber the fans.
That's true.
Most of the seats in a ball game would be empty. Did at the time, did that strike you as odd, or was that just the way things were back then?
Well, what do I know? You could go. I played a few games one year in the Boston Braves. Before a lot of people or just a few people, I just went out there and knew I was supposed to play the game.
Right. You did play some games in Milwaukee, and my recollection is that Milwaukee was not necessarily a city where you enjoyed some of your greatest successes, at least in the batter's box.
I did not. Could not. I think it was the background. Milwaukee had a background that was hard to see. I'm going to blame it on that anyway. And just didn't have a success, and a lot of other parks that I had a success, but Milwaukee I just didn't tear it up. And I've got a few stories about some of the Milwaukee players in there too.
One of the things you say is
you've heard of him, haven't you?
All right.
And then one of my best friends, mate, was Roger Craig,
who wrote the foreword for your book.
Right. I had a. Well, my very first roommate in the major leagues was a little Italian guy by the name of Bob Ramazzotti, and he smoked these horrible, crooked Italian cigars. And after the first week, and he smoked them in the room, and after the first week, I went to the general manager and said, "Help! I want another roommate. I can't breathe." And so he did, but Ramazzotti. He was a nice guy, but his cigars were bad news. Everybody was fine. I never bumped into anybody in all these years. I guess I ran across 300-400 guys I've played with. Everybody was nice. Never had any guy that I could say that I never did like that guy. Just everybody was fine.
You tell an interesting story about batting behind Hank Sauer in the lineup and how sometimes...
And come the ball at my head or at my chest or hit me in the rear end, and that was because Hank had hit a home run. You know, I had anything to do with it. And I had bruises on me all year long just because of Hank. And I forgot to tell Hank that I always hold that against him. you find out there was some out in the scoreboards, you know, with the binoculars. And then you try to catch them, and some of them are loading up on the ball to pitch. And there was one little bit
about, you know, meeting presidents and being on the Ed Sullivan Show and all kinds of things that, you know, never in your wildest dreams could you imagine happening to little old Ransom Jackson.
From Little Rock.
I think one of the really best stories you tell in the whole book in that regard is when you talk about meeting one of the true legends of the 20th century, Red Grange.
Yeah.
Explain to our listeners how this happened.
Well, I was at the ballpark in Chicago, and after the game, a guy comes up with another guy and says, I'd like you to meet Red Grange. And I said, good gosh. And he says, he's very interested in you because you played football for 3 years, and so I met him, and he was talking. He said, would you like to come down to my apartment? And I said, in a flash. And so we went down there, and I spent a couple of hours down there talking to him. And we just talked about old-time football. And
famous Jacksons, like Randy Jackson, a judge for American Idol, and sometimes mistaken for other contemporary
Well, I'm not mistaken personally. These are fan mails.
Right, exactly.
I don't look a thing like these guys.
And even got one, you said, that was addressed to Shoeless Joe Jackson, of course, who played Bauer for your father's laundry business.
Mm-hmm.
And you ended up writing your dad a check. Can you tell our listeners about that moment in your life?
I worked down there in off season for a couple of years. I didn't get paid or anything, but I'd be out there slopping sheets and you know, and driving this and that. We had about 30 people, and we had bought this for an investment, Dad and I, and it just didn't work out. So they had to declare bankruptcy, and they told me that that I owed to the fabulous IRS $6,000, and my World Series check was $6,000. What a coincidence. So I took my World Series check and paid off.
And in the off season, you would work in the family's laundry business or sell life insurance. I mean, you were ordinary guys. And I'm sure that's part of what is still sort of astonishing.
I know that, but I just...
celebrating the importance of fresh water in our world and our lives. In, among other things, we'll be previewing the Freshwater Fun Day that will be coming up at Pets Beer Garden on Monday the 29th. Also on Monday, I will be replaying my interview recorded back in 2006 with the legendary comedian Bob Newhart, who passed away yesterday at the age of 94. On Tuesday, Mike DeWitt, former track coach at UW Parkside, now at Case High School, he has worked with three of the race walkers who will be competing for the United States in the upcoming Olympic Games in Paris. And on Wednesday, a look at improvisation and how it is a part of all of our lives and our world. Randy Fertel's fast mild overnight with a low of 58. Tomorrow, much like today, sunny and a high of 79. Sunday will warm to a high of 83 degrees. Very similar forecast on Monday. A chance of rain then each of the next several days next week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. But right now, it looks like it's going to be an absolutely gorgeous weekend. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.